G'day trendsetters, this is episode 582 of the Trendsmove podcast. My name is Tim Egg, and like always, if you have a training, racing, nutrition questions, multiple questions, put yourself down for a few. Send them on through to trendsmove.com, or if that's a bridge too far, you can just jump onto your little email machine and type in tim@trendsmove.com. Now, today's... Oh, I also put a new blog on coronavirus.com. Not 5 minutes ago. So if you're remotely interested in my training and you want to see what I've been up to, yep, coronavirus.com is where you want to be moseying on over to. Now, today's episode's a little bit different. I had yesterday, I had a video call with an athlete whose target is sub 9 hours, and he recorded this conversation. He's got a YouTube video channel, which I'll add a link to the show notes. I'm not sure if this will end up into his YouTube channel or not. But basically, I just thought he recorded it, sent it to me and said, we can stick it into the podcast if I want. I thought, you little ripper. So I could just do another podcast. We're doing, you know, very little work for it. And I like that. So I thought... just a little note at first, we're recording this video call during the AFL Grand Final. So at first, I was going to cut it out, but it's, you know, remotely amusing to myself if I keep it in, that we start talking about the Geelong Cats and Sydney Swans. So that's what that would be about. But he's got a pretty strong target of going sub 9 hours in May next year, and this is our little conversation we have. I hope you guys enjoy.
I'm at the Cat 62. The Cats are 62, Swans are 20.
Yeah, no, and, I just it's on the TV. It is on the TV outside. I have but it looks pretty one sided so far. So.
Yeah, very, very much so. I've been spending the entire week walking around to all my mates that follow Geelong, go the Swans.
Yeah.
And then all my mates that follow the Swans, I go the Cats.
That sounds just, about right.
Because I don't care about either team.
Yeah.
I've been a real irritation to both of them.
Nah, I imagine that's how it goes. But yeah, I mean, sort of my hope with this... this meeting was, I suppose, for a bit of context, it was like I was looking at the Cairns results this year for my age group, and there was some times in like the low 9 hours, and I was sort of thinking, okay, if I want to, you know, win my age group at Port Macquarie, at least if I want to start that race confident that I'm going to win, like I should be prepared at least, or at least aim towards going for a 9 hour Ironman. Like that's where that goal kind of came from. And I mean, it's a pretty, you know, I think that's right at a top end of like, that would be a very hard to achieve goal kind of thing, where it's certainly like, you know, wouldn't set it any higher, but you know, there's a chance maybe with a lot of training that I could get there. So I sort of thought, well,
with the amount of time we have, that's a good case scenario to sub 9 hours. And I think I like shooting for big scary goals, because those days, though, it appears you don't have too many of them, but those days where you think, God, I really don't want to get out of bed, they force you to get out of bed to do them.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's right at that top end of like, you know, I maybe could get there. So I think it's the perfect sort of spot to aim for in that regard. And so then I thought, okay, well, what if, you know, I was sort of ask you, what would it take to go 9 hours? And then if I just go and do those things, and then we basically see what result comes from that. So we just see what it would take to do 9 hours. I then go and do that and see where that takes us, basically.
So so we're definitely all in on Port Macquarie, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah, that's certainly A race, yeah.
Yeah, because as I was mentioning before, the Ironman Cairns, Ironman Western Australia, well, I mean, all very strength specific. The demands on both races are very different.
Yeah.
You've got Ironman Port Macquarie, where you're going to be dipping into VO2 in aerobic state, and then you have to try and recover 60-65% of FTP bring it back up to 75% of FTP without losing. So you're dipping into the red, but you've got to recover from that. With something like Cairns, it's 120 k's of it's all headwind, and you got 60 k's tailwind. So the demands just on the bike alone is very, very different. Port Macquarie, with the run, the demands are slightly different, where you've got that hill that you run up, where Cairns is just all flat. So the demands are different, so the training's got to be slightly different. But in particular, on the swim training would have to be different, and the bike training would definitely be different compared to both. Races. But so with Port Macquarie, not a lot of people go sub 5 hours on the bike. So the ones that are, they're generally the top dogs. And to make it to go sub 5 hours on the bike, you really need to get out of the water with them or with the select few. And it really is under an hour. And that plan of coming out around 57 minutes, I think that's a true. I think you're on track for that because you've been tracking nicely with your swim.
Yeah.
And so you'd have to get out of the water with that. And then it's a matter of optimizing to give yourself a best chance to get out of the water, like buying the best quality wetsuit you can. Because the difference between an entry level wetsuit and the top of the range wetsuit, like you look at the Orca. Just the entry level Orca versus the Orca 3.8. There's like a 5 minute per couple of k's different. That's huge.
Yeah. That is huge.
And then on the bike, one of the key factors is going to be aerodynamics, lowering your drag and drive train efficiency. Just working right through everything. Yeah. One thing you can do would make some good YouTube videos. And if you really want to nerd out on it, which is crap I love, is the Chung method, trying to lower your CDA. So you can measure drive chain efficiency, which is massive. So, wax chain, the way you clean your bike, there could be, 10 watts difference that. Huge, huge difference. Clothing, the position, you can test everything using the Chung method. It's a mathematical equation that takes out people go, oh, it's hard to get your CDA because of the wind and this and that. This cuts out all that sort of crap. So it's I'll email you a link to the brief on it, but it's really good. So it's a matter of trying to become as efficient on the bike as you we're taking away training. We'll just look at your aerodynamics. It's a matter of you want to there's a really good book. I've actually read it twice in the last few months. Start at the End by his name's a blank at the moment. He's just got the hour record. He's one of the most aerodynamic people in the world. And it's just, you're just going through absolutely everything on the bike to trying to make it as efficient as possible.
Yeah, you posted about that in Train Smoother, I think. You posted a link to that or a video or something like that. I do remember watching something like that.
Yeah. So it's some good stuff he has in that book of his and general podcasts and stuff. It's worth looking him up because he has some good information. So it's just a matter of
I was gonna say, I think the bike's really critical, I think, to setting that really fast time, especially at Port Macquarie. So whatever we can sort of do in the race as far as aerodynamics and efficiency needs to be done.
Because you in the email you said you think about you want to hold a power, you think it'd be roughly around that 250 watts. I don't know if it'll be that high. It might be headbutting it, but it's the goal would be how can you do sub 5 hours with the least amount of watts as possible. You can start fresh on that run. So making everything efficient on the bike's one thing. Then you're going to look at your training. But bike handling skills is massive. So yeah, something like Port Macquarie, the people that spend the most of their training time on the trainer versus doing their long bike rides outside, and that worked on power control outside, they can leave 20 minutes on the course. Yeah. But the people that train indoors are really exposed on a course like Port Macquarie.
Yeah, I bet.
So it's really, really trying to hoe into your bike handling skills, gear changing at the right times. And a lot of that really is spending time out in the real world.
Yeah,
and if
ever
you get a chance to ride, especially ride behind either a professional cyclist or a retired professional cyclist, the way they select different cadences, their gear changes, it's like a work of art. It's,
yeah.
It can be a beautiful thing. So you can take minutes off your course by just having good bike handling skills. And then testing nutrition out. How many carbs per hour can you handle? Can be huge. From the bottom end, 60 grams of carbs per hour through to 120 grams carbs per hour. Most of us can handle 90 grams of carbs per hour. Anything over that, you do need to train your gut to be able to handle it. But you've got people like Jan Frodeno and the Norwegians and a lot of other pros, especially pro cycling, they're headbutting around that 120 grams of carbs per hour, but that has to be slowly pushed up too.
Put in the long rides a bit more frequently, like try and practice high carb intake over those long efforts. Yeah, because the last races were probably 60 to 90 grams of carbs, I think I did. So, yeah, between 60 and 90 at Port and Sunshine Coast, if I had to estimate it, would have been around there.
Yeah, so if you go for let's call it a four-hour bike ride, in those last 3 hours, can you consume 300 grams of carbs? And what are the results? Is there a power fade during that? Is there a power spike during that? Is there any GI issues? And were you able to even do a little run off the bike, even if it was – three Ks up the road and back? And it's just a matter of there was a coach that would get, I forget his name too, I'm hopeless with names today, he would get his athletes just before brick runs to drink a liter of fizzy water, 1 liter of fizzy water straight after the bike, and then start their run just to get their guts used to a whole lot of crap going on.
That's funny.
It's a bit gnarly for me to try, but I can see the value in it.
I bet it'd work, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the bike, a lot of you will try and work on aerodynamics, drivetrain efficiency, and I will have plenty of time to practice on the actual Port Macquarie course as well. Like, I'm up there every 2 or 3 weeks with family. So that's a big advantage for us, I think, because I'll know that course really well, try and get out on that. On the road a lot, and I suppose on those rides too, I can practice, going up hills efficiently and finding areas where I can pick up some extra speed, and use that course to my advantage, I suppose.
You can also test. You can test on those hills the least amount of power that you're going to need to go up it. So you can go up at 300 watts to time it, to check it, and then you go up at 280 or start off at 200. Yeah. Some of those it's impossible to go up at 200 and build up. And you think, right, well, I'm burning too many calories, burning too many matches at 400 watts, but 330 watts, I'm only 3 seconds slower, but I'm a hell of a lot less power going out. So you've got the you've got the unique advantage where you can test those hills to see the least amount of watts to get up them.
Mm-hmm. That'll be massive, I think. That experience, very, very valuable. So yeah, I suppose the bike is something I was thinking we should focus on a lot focus on a lot, because I feel like the swim and the run, like, I'm kind of tracking well enough that if we were to just keep doing what we're doing, I would be able to swim 57 and probably run sub 3 by that time anyway. So I think the bike is the thing that, for me, it feels like that's the real limiting factor. That's the thing that if we improve that, we'd get to 9 hours. That's the real thing to focus on. But I don't know. Do you think the same thing or?
Yeah, I fully agree with what you're saying there. And you said you want to increase your weekly your weekday rides. You know, we've been averaging around that 90 minutes, and you're happy to bump them up to 2 hours. Mm. I've in this next training block though, I've got to make a few changes from that last email you sent. But this next training block, one day a week, I've got as a 2 hour ride, and I'll just slowly implement that because we're also increasing your weekly long bike ride. So I don't want to increase too much too soon.
That's all at once. Yeah.
And while a lot of what I'm looking at is more playing around with see what's working, what's not, even though it's got you know, on the mid-December, it's going to be a home Ironman.
Yeah,
I'm using this as see if we can create a bit of a semi blueprint for what's going to work, what's not going to work. We got some pretty good information from last time, man. Yeah. It's just sorting it. Yeah, just redefining what we got going on.
Well, I think that's one thing I want to get from the indoor Ironman is use it as a real test session so we can sort of see where we're at on the day in terms of fitness, things that are holding me back. But we can also, like you said, test out the things that do and don't work in this training block. And it's almost like a dress rehearsal for the actual race next year. We could think of this as like, a dress rehearsal with this lead up.
I can't underestimate it enough how mentally taxing and hard your indoor Ironman's going to be. Yeah. I've had a half a dozen athletes now try them and 100% failed.
Yeah, wow.
Not once, but either they didn't start it or they just couldn't. I've had one. I think got to 20 something k's on the run and they couldn't do it because there's nothing. It's all mental there. There's no real finishing line. It's just them doing it. So it's going to be a tough day. But if you get out of, if you're able to achieve it, just that mental toughness that you're going to be able to. It's going to be a beautiful thing. I love it.
Yeah. It'd be good.
Not enough for me to do it. I wouldn't want to do it, but I love the fact that you're going to do it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, honestly. And the training's the fun thing as well. Like, I really love the lead up's going to be great, and it's going to give us plenty of good data to work off, and it's just more race experience too. Like, I sort of want to have that experience, 30k into a huge brick run, like 30k into an Ironman run. That's what I really need to try and get some more flight hours logged, I suppose, in that kind of state so that I'm prepared for it for the next race when it's really go time,
And just that Ironman build in the body, alone is huge. It's more hours.
Yeah, to be back in Ironman shape is, I remember us, our training's been very similar when we went into this last 70.3 is Ironman, but you do still sort of feel slightly different. Like when you've got a lot of 6 hour rides and 3 hour runs in regularly, I can sort of feel the difference between the Ironman shape and just the regular 70.3 shape. It's certainly feel like I'm able to go a lot longer and a lot more, aerobically efficient, I suppose, is how I would describe the feeling when I was just before Ironman. Yeah.
Also, another thing I would consider is using more data to help get yourself into peak shape. We use Final Surge. I've got coach's account for Final Surge, which is good, which most athletes I coach is under Final Surge. But I also have a coach's account for Today's Plan, which takes data to a completely new level. Okay. So we're looking at training stress scores. We're looking at chronic training load, training stress balances. Then we can set that to target. So if it goes to -30, it will set me an alarm so I can just double check what we've got coming on the next day or the next day or two, just so we're not burning too deep into the red. It just comes up with a whole lot of numbers. it's you're looking at so if you start up a today's plan account, the today's plan will charge a few dollars to directly to the athlete, and I just log straight in. But it's takes away a lot of the guesswork, and it also adds particular points we are trying to achieve per week, per training block, and then looking at that exact moment of just takes away that little bit of guesswork and knows exactly what we're after. Yeah,
a lot more specific data. No, that's good. Yeah, yeah. We can definitely have a look at that. I mean, in terms of training, what do you think we're going to be, I suppose, focusing on to go 9 hours? Like I saw in the next block, we've got a few good long swim sessions. I only had a quick look at it after I finished riding today. A few good long swim sessions and, the two-hour midweek aerobic ride looks good, but then there's still the strength endurance and the VO2 stuff in there as well, which I suppose is pretty like essential for Port Macquarie, especially the VO2 stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of the normal stuff. It's just a lot more we're just going to build a lot more aerobic zone, aerobic volume. Yeah. So that will be the key. So let's say we'll at least want to keep leading into an Ironman at least 1 hour's worth of low cadence work spread over 90 minutes or spread over 2 hours.
Yeah.
But just chewing those lower gears and then little bit of VO2 work, and then we'll eventually get into dipping into VO2, recovering just under Ironman power, and then eventually trying to recover at Ironman power. So it depends on the where we're at, but it could be just like a minute at high 120% of FTP, and then 5 minutes at 75% of FTP.
Yeah.
So it's just a bit of a lactate clearance.
No, I think one thing just it's really important, I suppose, to work on that good aerobic efficiency. Like that's what I feel like is something that, is going to pay real dividends, especially in the Ironman, is if we can do a lot of that good aerobic work. I feel like that's what helps me out massively. And I think like my run got pretty strong, or stronger than I expected in the last Ironman, right? And I sort of thought that was good, long, consistent, those long runs where it's just week in, week out, 32Ks, and I would do them on reasonably hilly routes and all at like a really moderate intensity. So it was just solid base building, a few hills in there for muscle strength, but just good, consistent, long hours of running. And I sort of thought, okay, well, that's something that I remember on the bike. There was a few weeks there where we had 6 hour rides where either I had like mechanicals or just things where I remember a few things going wrong and I didn't have the same consistency on the long ride that I had on the long run. And I thought that's one thing that would be massive to help my ride out, is to try and really get some good, consistent, long aerobic rides in there. And that's what kind of why I started doing the 2 hours in the middle of the week as well as the long rides on the weekend, just to take it from 90 minutes, what we stand it like normally do, just take that up to 2 hours, and then I get a bit more of that aerobic work throughout the week.
Yeah, I fully agree. And spending time at that, we're talking FTP here, and it is a flawed system. It's just a mathematical equation. But the spending time between that 65, 68, 69%, that's like your fat max area. So that spending time there, it's just huge.
I always use those numbers as like a bit of a guide. You do say that, FTP is just that mathematical equation. But one thing I really like about your programming is it's a lot of the time it's sort of written to that perceived effort. So, threshold. And you can kind of feel, or at least I think I can kind of feel when it's like, okay, well, lactate's starting to build up now. So I must be at threshold. So if I just hover just under this, or when it's, just a good aerobic, like you can sort of feel the zone that you're in. And I think that's something I've really appreciated, the way that you write the sessions to say it should feel this way. And then I can just focus on that. And I'll use the numbers, like I'll glance up at them as a guide, but I almost know what kind of feeling I'm trying to tap into on each of the intervals. And one thing I did a lot in the last Ironman prep was I used erg mode on the trainer heaps. And I've stopped doing that completely now. And I'm just doing, just using those numbers on the screen is kind of like a guide. But I'm really just trying to tap into how I think it should feel based on each effort. Because if it's a VO2 session, it should be VO2 max. That's how it should feel. Or if it's a threshold session, I should be feeling like I'm at threshold. Or if it's aerobic, I should feel like I'm aerobic. So I'm just trying to use that as a real, yeah, basic guide, but I train to feel, I think, more than anything else.
Yeah, and that's the best way. You can not hitting your power or going over or going under.
Yeah,
that's one thing. But that perceived effort, I think, is the most important aspect of it all.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I really like the style of the coaching you've got there where you do ride it to perceived effort. And I noticed that in racing as well, like at Sunshine Coast, I was very rarely actually checking my watch. It was a lot of, I was sort of racing to perceived effort as well. And I noticed when, if I got a little bit quicker, say on the run, I could feel like lactic acid was really building up too quickly and I wasn't going to be able to hold it for, you know, the next hour. So I was able to back it off. And I think if I was just looking at my watch, I would have either gone too fast or too slow and I wouldn't have had a good sense of what I could actually do in the race. So I think that's where I've noticed a real benefit of training to perceived effort. When you actually are racing, you feel like, okay, I can hold this, or I can just back it off a little more, or I should back it off. You know, it really makes you a lot more in tune with what you can actually do on the day.
Oh, absolutely. And the amount of times you hear that my power meter didn't calibrate, or my watch played up, or
yeah,
lost signal or whatever, and I couldn't see my numbers. Yeah. You do hear that effect.
Yeah.
And so at least when you, as what you're doing, is that had a whole feeling of, you know, how it's supposed to feel.
You know,
your watch fails or whatever, who cares?
It's
not going to change anything.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the numbers can be changed by so many different things on the day, right? Like your 4 minute 15 per K pace is totally different on one day compared to the next. So it's all about what, you know, you can feel yourself. If you're filling up with lactic acid, or if you think you're still aerobic, you know what you can actually do. But, you know, I think you can know more than you watch if you do it properly.
Well, and also because I don't coach to pace for running, especially for triathlon, because there's so many variables. There's hills, there's weather, there's footpaths that go up and down like this constantly on the driveways. Yeah. And
pedestrians,
just tell someone to hold 5 minute K pace for the next 20 minutes. That could be really spot on, or it could be too much at times, too little at other times. And
So I
generally don't deal with that way.
Yeah. No, I really like the, I suppose, just back to the general training, I think, at the moment. And, like, I'll sort of explain what I think we're working on and just let me know if there's anything different. But, like, in a swim, it seems like we're increasing the volume. So there's a lot of the longer aerobic sessions, but there's still a few top-end stuff. So we're still kind of pulling on both ends there, where we can still get the speed in, but we are focusing on a lot of volume underpinned with, like, aerobic capacity, I suppose, in the water. And then the bike, I mean, at the moment, we're just building the foundation of, like, good aerobic volume on the bike as well. And then we're adding in, just the strength endurance, as you said, and some VO2 work on top of that. And then the run, I feel like we've got the Tuesday top end work at the track. So that's like keeping our speed. And then basically the rest of that is like your long aerobic volume, right? Like, so it's like for all three legs, it's all trying to build aerobic capacity. And then we've got some top end stuff sort of built in on top of that. But the real base at the moment is just trying to increase that volume, increase the work capacity and aerobic efficiency.
Yeah. For yourself, you respond very well to volume. So it makes more sense to see where those boundaries lie. Without breaking you, you're responding very well to all your swims being 4 or 5 Ks, right? So let's see what happens when we make them all 4 to 6 Ks.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And we're seeing improvements. It's tracking that volume's working for you. So it makes sense to continue down that path. Other athletes, completely the opposite. But for yourself, it works tremendously at this stage.
And I think that's just back to training to perceived effort. I almost feel like when I do train with higher volume, I can feel the benefits more. Like, I feel myself respond to the volume. I think that sort of comes from a lot of training at perceived effort and trying to focus on that feeling. And, you know, you get really in tune with how workouts feel and how you are feeling on the day. And I do feel like areas of big volume, I've always felt fitter at the back end of those. I certainly would agree that I respond well to the bigger volume.
Yeah. No, it's good. It's, It's one of those sports that if you stay very consistent and the more you put in, you just will naturally filter through the field. With the volume you're doing and the volume you're able to do and able to handle and recover through it, I feel like we'll progress a little faster than most other people will be.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely good. Yeah. And I'm definitely enjoying the training a lot at the moment. And I like the way you've sort of written it in now. So every few weeks we have the big challenging workouts. And I mean, physically that there's advantages to it, but I think mentally as well, like there's something to sort of look forward to, and, you can kind of get that mental toughness side going and build it up in the mind, and it breaks up just repetitive training. So I think that's going to be a good way to break it up as well.
Yeah. Just a good bit of fun.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, because sometimes it can just—it's something to look forward to as well. Mm-hmm. All right, in three weeks' time or 2 weeks' time or whatever, I'm going to have the Peter Reed Psycho Week weekend.
That one's good. I looked that one up on Train Smooth and read it when you wrote it. I was like, oh, that'll be a good weekend. Yeah,
that'll be good.
No, but I feel good about how we're tracking and progressing. And I think, the 9 hours is like right on that limit of like, okay, well, maybe we can get there. So let's see what we can do, basically.
Yeah.
In terms of training, yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. Mm-hmm. And I can't illustrate enough focusing time on improving aerodynamics.
Mm, okay.
Will be huge, especially, especially on a course like Port Macquarie.
Yeah.
Where those downhills, there's so much time you could gain on those downhills. What was it, 2019 or whatever? There was, I think it was that. Cam Worth was racing Port Macquarie, he was going back into town, and he stayed in that aero position the whole way to a spot where most people would actually have to hop out of that position to turn. He's just fully locked in. It was unbelievable to watch.
Yeah.
But I don't recommend turning a couple of those corners in the aero position, but just getting is being as friendly as possible to the wind would be a huge saving. And what you can gain in just being aerodynamics, spending one weekend, one 4 week block or whatever, focusing on aerodynamics could mean 6 months worth of training, the gains you can make from that.
Yeah.
So it would be worth the investment.
Yeah,
definitely. The investment of time. So I'll email you a link to the Chung method, and I've been recently trying to hunt down programs that does it all for me, but I haven't fully come up with something yet.
All right, yeah, no, that'll be good. Yeah, and I'll sort of really map the course out well there too, and get some notes down and have a really good mental approach to it, so that I know on the day exactly how I need to attack all the different sections to go as fast as I can. Really break it down.
And I also mentioned before in an email is checking out best bike splits, because that will give you the power to every single hill as well, just and it will allow you to play around with what happened if I lost a little bit of weight, what happened if I gained a bit of weight, what happened if I, improve my roll resistance, I got latex tubes instead of normal tubes, what happens if I, it's only as good as the information you give it, and if you give it as much good information as you can, it will tell you exactly what you need to do to go sub 5 hours, whether you need higher threshold, whether you need more aerodynamics or whatever. So it's really cool. Even if you just pay for a month subscription, get what you want out of it and cancel your subscription, you've got what you need. But you can also, with that, upload the course, the PAL file they recommend, straight onto your Garmin. So as you're riding, it will see that you're on this hill, and they go, ride at 322 watts.
Yeah, nice.
It can do that too. It annoys me having the notification come up every couple of hundred meters, but it does offer that.
Could be useful. Yeah, that's definitely something that I could actually check out. Yeah, because that would be a really big advantage, wouldn't it, if you knew exactly how to ride it.
Yeah, it's just worth it. And it'll give you a cutout sheet too that you can paste on top of your bike on, hills at 3%, right at this power or whatever. It's worth the worth investigating. It really is.
Yeah, okay, sweet. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on, or otherwise probably probably wrap it up, but yeah, up to you.
Nah, I'm all good, man.
Yeah, all good. I think that's good. Good to check in and see what we're sort of working on. And yeah, good to I'm happy with where we're heading, and I think it's good goal to work towards. So I'm pretty excited and looking forward to the training to come.
Yeah, exciting times.
Yeah, very good. All right. Well, thanks heaps for that. I'll
No worries, man.